Welcome in to a Wednesday morning edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. Alex, we got another mailbag on the way.
Yes, we do, and we got some great questions today to break down. First, we will talk about Frank Ntilikina and his status going into next season amongst what will probably be another busy offseason of rotating the point guard spot. We are going to rank our least favorite to favorite Knicks in order of the whole roster real quick. And then we are going to break down five opportunities the Knicks have to do something this offseason and what the chances are that they will do them properly. All that and more next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
His own rebound, back up, off the glass, it's good! RJ Barrett brings the Knicks to the rim.
Ntilikina. What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane, Knox foul from behind, count it, and one to Trier. Trier drives down. Oh!
Becomes infectious. Becomes infectious.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. I am Gavin Shaw, quarantined as I have been for the last month in my apartment in New York. Alex, you're across the river. I saw on social media you were able to shoot around a little bit today. I am incredibly jealous. If there's one thing in the world I could do right now, it might just be to go to a basketball court outside. How is that? Hopefully a little bit cathartic as we're about to get into this mailbag.
Yeah, I only shared it on Twitter today, but I've had my basketball hoop available to me pretty much this whole time, which is nice. There's just like a little court. There's a really weird court in my condo complex, right? It's got two basketball hoops, one of which is like about the right size. I think it's maybe like an inch short. And then the other one, which is definitely like well short, like it's probably like 9 feet almost, or like 9.5, because like I can almost dunk on it. Or I think it probably could if I hit it just right, and I can't quite dunk on a regular hoop. So there's that one, but I usually use the good one on the one side. But then on the other side of this like big ass like pavement slab, there's a volleyball court on pavement. And I don't know who would want to subject themselves to playing volleyball on pavement, because that just sounds really painful if you go to dive for a ball or something. So hardwood's bad enough when you play it inside, like on a basketball court. I cannot imagine playing it on pavement outside. But yeah, I've had my basketball hoop now for, you know, this whole time. So ever since the weather started getting nice, I've been out there, I don't know, not every day, but, you know, a couple times a week. It is pretty nice. It's nice to be able to shoot on hoop, even if there's no lines. So I don't know if I'm actually shooting three-pointers or twos or what. I just shoot from really far back, and I just know it's a three then. So
there's one in my dad's apartment building that I'm getting closer and closer to using, and I would play there all the time growing up. The issue is the ceiling is extremely low and the hoop is only 9 feet, so it just totally ruins your shot for any other hoop. But I'm getting a month out. I usually play like 3 or 4 times a week, so I'm getting to the point where I might just say screw it and head over there, risk
that's
life and like, limb, and just go for it.
That's just like the community center by me. The hoop, I think, is the right height, but there's no three-point line because the court is too small. You could practically play it like slam ball, like jumping off the walls and crap, like and dunking. Yeah. Like it's how like close proximity it feels. But like based off the way the ceiling is, it's like very open, like right over the hoops, but then it like ducks down like really low. And so if you have any sort of arc on your jumper, which like mine has a ton, you're screwed. Like you hit the ceiling. So like it's literally just like paint game all day. You know, maybe if you can hit from the corners, you can sort of shoot from there, but that's it. That's my indoor community center court by me. It's very much the same thing.
I've always been sort of fascinated with like how people growing up with like very specific conditions and like types of hoops have influenced their game. Like I remember there was something about Steph Curry like honing his game, shooting on like kind of a weird rim or something, and that made it slightly more difficult to hit shots. And like he kind of theorizes like that was a factor in turning him into such a great shooter. I think it was David Thompson, who was one of the great dunkers in the 70s, who like grew up playing, and like I hope I'm not getting this wrong, I'm pretty sure it was him, grew up playing on like a mud court, and that like, or it was like it was packed in dirt, and like for some reason they made it much harder to like jump, and he spent his whole life like jumping and dunking off of that, and then he got to play on like much higher quality courts in college and in the NBA, and that just totally changed his game. So I've always been intrigued with that. It sounds like our conditions would turn us into crummier shooters, which I'm sure will be the case when we get back to real basketball, but at that point, I just won't care. Anyways.
Yeah, I gotta shoot like Alfred Payton when I shoot my just straight line drive shots. That's it.
That's a perfect transition because where he might come up in a certain question about our most hated Knicks, but we have a mailbag ahead of us. Four questions. The first two are kind of similar, Alex. I'm just going to read them out together and let you go whichever direction you want. But the first one comes from the always reliable Osiris809 at PSBart02. And he says, I'm assuming the rest of the season will be played. Good assumption. That means the New York Knicks will go into the offseason on the back of some good games by Frank. I doubt there will be much in terms of options at point guard in free agency. Assuming they draft a point guard, who do you pencil in as a starter in training camp? Also, Elf will still be average. Agreed. Average might be generous. Next question from Mark at Far Off Mark. He says, if we draft a point guard, would you rather move RJ Barrett to the 3 and start Frank at the 2, or should Frank lead the second unit? So I think you can kind of sum these up, Alex, by just saying, how do you see the point guard situation unfolding next year?
Yeah, so I mean, there's the two. Both questions assume that the Knicks draft a point guard, and the first one just sort of asks who do you pencil in as starter. The second one assumes that Frank could not be the starter point guard. I think my solution would be to start Frank at point guard at first. I don't know. It seems like the Knicks pick, unless they luck out and they jump into the top three, which it would be the Knicks' luck to jump into the top three this year, and what's widely considered to be one of the weaker drafts, like, ever. But, like, if they stick at the 6-7 whatever pick, I think their most likely two destinations are either top 3 or 7 or 8. If you, like, factor all the odds together. Like, they have a 40, or maybe it's the whole top 4, but whatever. They have, like, a 48% chance of hopping into the top 4 and a, like, 50% chance of falling to 7 or 8 or something. And then, like, weirdly enough, even though they're at the 6th spot, they only have like a 2% chance of staying at the 6th spot. I don't think that's exactly right, but it's the numbers are really, really strange like that. But they have a pretty high chance of moving back to 7 or 8. So assuming that they did, I mean, they took Frank Ntilikina at the 8th spot just a few years ago, and he's going to be entering the final year of his rookie deal. I think, at least to me, to get into sort of what Osiris said in his question, he played some good games to end the year. And, he had that 2010 game, the second last game of probably what will end up being the season for the Knicks. I really doubt that we'll see the 2019-20 Knicks play another game. So I think that's enough momentum that as long as he doesn't totally screw it up in training camp that you can pencil him in as the starter. And whether RJ should be the 2 or not is a whole nother story. I might still move RJ down to the 3 regardless and hopefully slot in either a re-signed Damian Dotson or an option picked up Reggie Bullock into that 2 spot just for a little more shooting. But, I think that you can give Frank the job at this point. And, we've been saying for how many years now, and I mean, the Knicks have certainly made him jump through enough hoops to do it, but like, Frank had to earn his playing time. And I think at this point, Frank has earned his playing time, and I think now's finally the time for him to have a job coming in training camp for once, rather than coming in training camp being like, oh, is this finally going to be the year that Frank seizes the day and snatches a spot of some sort? Like, is he actually going to, become a starter at a training camp and blah, blah, blah. I think it should come in this year being like, no, Frank should be the starter going into training camp. And then whoever the Knicks take, even if they would take, like, the only one that I would maybe say you consider putting Frank at the 2 or benching Frank or whatever is maybe if you get LaMelo Ball and he really shows out during training camp. But the rest of the guys don't seem like really sure things anyway. If they draft Haliburton or Killian Hayes or Cole Anthony, any of those sort of guys, I don't think you can really just be like, yes, absolutely, they're good enough that from day one they should be starting over Frank Ntilikina. I think you can make a real case that Frank sets the tone well early. You know, hopefully he'll be starting with Mitchell Robinson, who he has great chemistry with, and you just sort of roll from there and then bring this new draft pick off the bench, which point guard is traditionally, you know, one of, if not the hardest position to learn coming into the NBA regardless. So I think, and you know, Frank has obviously been proof positive of that. It took him a couple of years of still growing physically and then for his game to grow and sort of catch up for him to start looking like he might, you know, he might really start turning into the player that we think that he could maybe be. And, you know, I think now's the time to put that to the test and see if he's ready to make that next leap to start the season.
Yeah, you know, I think you're absolutely right, and I'm in total agreement. The odds of getting someone in the first round who deserves to start over Frank, like I don't think it's going to happen. And you make a good point. LaMelo Ball might be the one guy with such overwhelming offensive talent that that's plausible. But I really think he's going to need some time to one, physically adjust to the NBA. He's really, really young. I think he's still 17 and just, I mean, defensively, he's going to be like Trae Young his rookie year. Like he's just going to get absolutely destroyed on that side of the floor for, again, at least his first season. And the guys who could be decent defensively, like Haliburton because of his size and length, I think Hayes is pretty highly regarded in the defensive end. I don't think they're significant enough upgrades over Frank, even in the best case scenario offensively, that you could justify starting them over him and sacrificing the chemistry, to your point that Frank has built up with Mitch, has built up with RJ. And we've been, I think, with good reason, begging to see those three share the court together more throughout the year. And that's not even taking into account the fact that you'd assume at least some improvement from both Frank and RJ as perimeter shooters, which, as anyone listens to this podcast knows, that's my clear emphasis. And I think the most obvious avenue for the offense being better next year. But I guess the core point is, like, there isn't going to be a rookie who represents an upgrade over Frank offensively to the point that it offsets how much worse they'll be on the defensive end. And I think, again, the only exception to that rule is someone like Cole Anthony proving himself to be a high enough level shooter, or LaMelo Ball just proving to be so overwhelmingly talented as a floor general that you could justify moving Frank off the ball. But I don't see a scenario where Frank shouldn't be a starter next year. Whether that means he will be, that's completely in question and kind of comes down to who the coach is and how the current administration feels about him. But I think he's earned that right.
You know, this is like a totally separate discussion, sort of, but are you starting to warm up to the idea of not taking a point guard in the draft, potentially? Like, I don't know about you, the more I look into this Denny Avdija, I'm going to have to learn how to say his last name sooner than later, but the more I see about him, I'm kind of intrigued by him. I've always been intrigued by Anthony Edwards, if they could somehow jump towards the top. I mean, I guess your options sort of fall off into the, it's either bigs or point guards for most of the lottery after that, other than maybe like Okoro, or you could argue like RJ Hampton, more of a shooting guard, Tyrese Maxey, more of a shooting guard, guys like that. But it's intriguing. Like I'm kind of leaning more towards instead of a point guard at this point, like I almost want to roll the dice with Frank, maybe try one last time to, you know, hit DSJ's career with the, you know, the paddles and see if we can shock him back to life and, you know, go with that for the year and then hit the, if it doesn't work out, the Knicks obviously aren't going to be that good, and then hit the 2021 draft in one of the most stacked drafts like ever with another high lottery pick and maybe take your shot at a point guard there.
Yeah, I'm a big advocate for the Knicks taking the best player available unless they think that guy is James Wiseman, because I don't see the need to take a center to try to compete with Mitch when he's so clearly the best part of your franchise right now. But outside of center, I don't think any position is locked down, especially when you consider RJ's versatility, his ability to really play the 1-4, depending on the lineup and depending on how much stronger he gets this offseason. But especially in a weaker draft, I really think you can't put yourself in a box. The only emphasis for me, again, and I've said this time and time again, is you need more shooting. And that's where I think when we had some of our initial discussions about draft prospects, I was a little bit down on Denny because his numbers were just atrocious. And especially some of the stuff at the free throw line was indicative of someone who wasn't going to be a great shooter, but he really, really turned it around towards the end of the season. And I mean, that's there's a lot to like there outside of the shot. So he's certainly someone I'm looking at with a more critical eye, and I'm excited, Alex, as we start to have more and more draft experts on what they think about and what they think about his long-term potential as a shooter. Because to me, again, you take the best guy available, but there has to be some weight towards that player's shooting ability, because I just don't think you can justify throwing another non-shooter in the lineup, point guard or not.
Yeah, and where things are going too, I'm already starting to think when we start having our draft experts on, I want to start asking about the 2021 class too.
Yeah, I'm with you.
The guy Cade Cunningham at the top there, I know I've talked to Spencer Perlman about him a little bit. And
I've watched him play in person. He's pretty amazing.
He's insane. He's the guy that I'm already starting to, like, you know, rub my palms together about and think like, oh, well, if the Knicks can just screw this up for one more year and shorten season next year, all you got to do is just play the youth all the time, and that's it. They can easily, you know, coast into a top four pick and then maybe win the lottery, but I guess we'll see.
Well, can't you see Tom Thibodeau just absolutely ruining that?
Tibbs is going to get hired as Knicks coach. His name is like, it came up a lot right away when Rose got hired, and now all of a sudden he's just sort of faded away. Like, I feel like I never hear his name anymore. Now it's all about, like, I've been hearing like JVG come up, you know, some, it's like there's always this like certain list of coaches that get brought up in relation to the Knicks, and then eventually they settle on a candidate that you never thought that they would anyway. Like when it was time for Fizdale too, it was like, oh, will the Knicks hire Mark Jackson? Will they hire, Thibodeau? Will they hire, JVG? Will they hire this, that, the other? And then it's like, oh no, David Fizdale interviewed and they hired him 4 days later or whatever. So, I don't know. I guess we'll see how it all shakes down this time. Just as long as it's not Mark Jackson, I should be all right with it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but first, a quick reminder. Today's show is brought to you in part by MyBookie. Sports have come to a screeching halt with basketball benched and pitchers off the mound, but our friends at MyBookie aren't going to let it get you down. Stay sane and stay entertained with access to your favorite games like blackjack, roulette, slots, war, and more. Doesn't matter whether you're out on the front lines or quarantined at home, the fun doesn't have to come to an end with MyBookie. Video poker not your thing, but still need a fix? They've got you covered with a host of live casino dealers online. That's right, they have professional dealers at their tables, live on site, 24/7. Your favorite squad sidelined because of the pandemic? All of them are. Don't even sweat it. MyBookie is partnered with some of the leading esports brands to bring you wagers on virtual action straight from the court in NBA 2K20. Plus, you can always do your part to make your bankroll great again by taking advantage of shifting odds on political bets. You can trust the industry leaders in times like these. They're reliable, upright, and best of all, they pay fast when you win. Visit mybookie.ag and use promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 150% bonus on your first casino deposit. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to receive 150% cash bonus on your first deposit, and you can claim those extra funds all the way up to $750. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA at mybookie.ag. You spin, you win, you get paid. At any rate, let's hop into the next question. This is a fun one. So our next question comes from Henry Fellner at Henrob's Fellover is his Twitter. He says, straight up, rank how much you like each player on the current roster and possibly also do a ranking of how good everyone on the roster is, in your opinion, if you have time. So, all right, Gavin, how about we do this way? Do you want to move five at a time each through the roster? Like, we can give our bottom five because that's not super important. Work our way up, and we'll do five, 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 and then we get to the top. Or let's do five, five, and then it's, what, seven players left after that? So we'll do four and then three, because I think our top three is pretty well defined, and then maybe we could just break down our top, like, five or so as far as just how good we think they are to address the second part of the question. Yeah?
I'm good with that. And we should clarify the way, or at least I think the way we both interpreted this was, like, sort of like an all-inclusive, like, for how much you like each player. Like, I took into account, like, who they are as a basketball player and, like, a little bit of personality stuff, too, but I tried not to weigh that too much, just because I unlike you, Alex, don't know the guys all that well. So
yeah, so I kind of did the same. And I mean, to be clear, none of them are really, I mean, at least in my experience, none of them are like huge assholes or anything. they're all pretty good dudes. It, just as far as you know, men go, you know, just as being guys. But as far as basketball players and their basketball personalities, I definitely have very strong opinions leaning different directions. So my bottom five, I guess it's pretty predictable. I don't know. I mean, I guess I'll see what yours is in a second. But I had Elfrid Payton as number 17 out of 17. I'll keep it brief with all these guys. I think everybody knows our opinions on these guys mostly at this point. But he just represented. He was like the this year's totem in front of Frank Ntilikina, you know, that seems to pop up every single year. It was you know, it was Jarrett Jack, and then it was Ramon Sessions that first year, and then it was Trey Burke, and then it was Emmanuel Mudiay, and now this year it was Elfrid Payton, DSJ to a certain extent. You know, there's just always these guys that are in front of Frank, and you and I and many other Knicks fans want to see Frank play more, and so Payton represented that. But on top of it, he kind of just played a two-man game with Julius Randle for most of his minutes. And I don't particularly enjoy his brand of basketball, where he seems to be just sort of like a less motivated Rajon Rondo that can't shoot the ball for anything but can rebound and pass fairly well but fishes for assists, and just it's not fun to watch. Wayne Ellington, just because he was brought in to be this sharpshooter that the Knicks haven't had in forever, like this good vet, and came in and just kind of shit the bed for the first over half of the season until after the point when the Knicks could have traded him and then started shooting like over 40% from three. That was not cool. Not cool move by him. Alonzo Trier is in my third spot. I don't know, contrary to like what a lot of places have, well, I shouldn't say a lot, but Ian Begley wrote a nice feature on Trier at one point about, you know, that he's been a good teammate and this, that, and the other, but then there was the problematic social media behavior where he was liking tweets that were bashing RJ Barrett, and I have never fully confirmed this, but I think that he was in a group DM with like a bunch of like 16, 17, 18-year-old Knicks fans and told them that he was getting traded at the trade deadline, and then he never got traded. Stuff like that. So yeah, just I'm kind of just over it at this point. His last few games sort of redeemed him for me, but I think in general, I'm just kind of over Trier now. Julius Randle comes in at fourth from the bottom for me. I probably don't dislike him. I know I definitely don't dislike him as much as you do, Gavin. I think that with better coaching, people would dislike him a lot less. He did put together some good stretches this year, but there were so many other stretches where he was not good, particularly under Fizdale, where Fizdale was running him as a point forward. And even towards the end of the year when he was doing better, he was still overusing that spin move in the traffic. He was still turning the ball over too much, being too careless. So not a huge fan there. And then my fifth guy up is Mo Harkless, just mostly because I feel like I just kind of don't have any feelings towards him. You know, if we could still rank Marcus Morris on this list, like, Marcus Morris would definitely be higher because I liked Morris a lot, but Harkless I'm just kind of ambivalent about. You know, the Knicks only had him for a little bit. He seemed like a professional. They seem to like him, maybe want to re-sign him. I can't imagine they're going to give him that much money, so he's probably gone, and, you know, he'll just be another one of those guys that had a cup of tea here and then left and we kind of forget about.
Yeah. My bottom two were Elf and Randle. I think they were the only two guys. Well, actually, I could throw DSJ in there as my third, and I'll give Portis, who spoilers also my top five, a shout out here, and maybe a little bit of this with Trier. So I'm unfairly isolating them, but I think like these two guys who are supposed to be like vets and leaders, like they were also like the only two dudes who like really like consistently like played like willingly blind, I guess, and just like ignored like open guys, and like, or like Elf would like sometimes pass up like easy shots to try to get assists, or like only try to pass it to specific guys. And they just, and I don't think, I mean, Elfrid, I don't have as good of a gauge for, and I don't think this is necessarily true for Randle, but they kind of gave off the appearance of playing for their stats on bad teams and were just like unwilling to shift their games into ways that were, more productive towards winning. And it just aesthetically, like, neither one is my type of player. I mean, having a point guard who just completely can't shoot is a disaster. And I'm sure people will point out when I mention that Frank is one of my favorite players. Like, all right, you're being a little bit of a hypocrite, but he just provides so much else. And I would also argue that his shot is far less broken than Peyton's is. Randall, I mean, it was just too many times where he just barreled into double and triple teams. And for someone who's allegedly such a good passer and did throw some high quality passes throughout the year, like he would constantly miss like open dudes in the corner or look guys off to try to get off his shot. And his game is just, I mean, I've said it a million times, but antithetical to what I like in a basketball player. And the fact that he was so inefficient on top of it, like he couldn't even do what he did in like a dominant way. It turned me off. DSJ, I mean, just because the season was such a disaster, though, I almost feel like I have him a little bit low because when he's on and when he's flying, like, just as an archetype, like, I've always really appreciated a point guard with just crazy, crazy springs. Like, there's such a joy in seeing someone relatively small fly through the air, and there, his moments, like, not every game, just because he really, really struggled this year, but like in his first run on the Knicks, he would have a moment or a layup every game where I'd kind of catch my breath and be like, wow, how did he just do that? So I feel for him. I hope things change, but he was just such a shit show, on the court, he's bottom three. Harkless, I'm with you. Just no emotional attachment to. Wasn't great defensively. Total non-factor outside of like that one game offensively. And then Portis is fifth for me, and I think this is probably unfair because he got better as the year went on, but sort of lingering resentment from the first couple of months where it looked like he just had no idea how to pass and was inefficient and didn't play any defense. And it just, again, kind of embodying everything the Knicks have valued over the years incorrectly in a basketball player. So that's my bottom five, Alex.
Yeah, so moving right along, then we've got so I get into Dennis Smith Jr. He's my sixth guy. And to your point, too, I mean, I feel bad for DSJ. And, you know, I still believe that he can turn it around. I don't know if he's ever going to be the starter that I'd once imagined that he could be all the way back when the Knicks had the chance to draft him. I thought that I remember back in draft time there, I was like, oh, he could potentially be similar to Markel Fultz, you know, who at the time was like the top prospect, but Fultz had better measurables and a little bit better shooting percentages and stuff. But I looked at DSJ and I was like, their stats, they're very statistically similar. DSJ seems like he has the athleticism to make up for not having the, you know, the plus wingspan and everything. And, you know, maybe we got something here. And, you know, I still think there's something there with him, but, you know, with everything that went on with him, he started off the year so weird with the, he's playing really poorly, and then everybody was getting on his case, but then we later figure out that I don't think his stepmother died suddenly. I'm pretty sure she was sick with something. They never really divulged details, but it seemed, you know, it seemed like it was kind of a not a sudden death, based off some of the reporting and whatever. So she might have been dealing with whatever it was she was dealing with early on in the season, which affected DSJ, and then, you know, he got back and he sporadically would have these decent games, but then he got hurt once or twice, and just a really weird year for him. It sort of reminds me in some ways of Frank's season last year, where Frank just couldn't, Frank didn't have a death in the family or anything, but he had it where every time he would start to figure it out, he would get hurt or something would happen to him and he'd have to sit out again and then come back and be super rusty. And, you know, it just became a whole thing, and it sort of felt that way for DSJ this year too. So I'm willing to give him one more year. But then I got Reggie Bullock as my next guy, which isn't even really a knock on him. You know, it's not, he's somewhat low, but it's just that I'm kind of getting all these veteran guys out of the way first. I thought he was a pretty good shooter when he first started. His percentages fell off a little bit and went actually below his career averages. I think if you put him on a better coach team overall, you know, someone that has an idea of how to use perimeter shooters properly, that he could be good and be a good 3-and-D player, and I hope the Knicks keep him in next year. Then I've got Bobby Portis, who was in your bottom five. He grew on me a lot more towards the end of the year, and maybe it was just because he was shooting hot, and if he wasn't shooting hot, I probably wouldn't be quite so high on him right now with my recency bias, but I sort of started to enjoy watching him play towards the end of the year, and it seemed like he was having fun, and it seemed like when he would come in, his teammates would have fun playing with him, by and large, other than the few times where he just went extremely shot happy. But, you know, I'll try to ignore those. But he became sort of a fun player to watch, and I think more desirable to watch than Julius Randle to end the year. And then Taj Gibson, I have next. Pretty simple. He was just a good professional. It took all those token starts from Mitch, which is sort of weird, but it was a coach's decision. But he said all the right things about Mitch and apparently was a good mentor to him. So for that, I am eternally grateful. And then my last guy of my second five is Kenny Wooten, who maybe it's unfair to put him this high considering we never even saw him play. But I have high hopes for him, and that's all that matters. Based off his G League highlights, I'm really excited to see him play next year. He also just seems like a pretty cool dude. He lobbied really, really hard to get signed onto the Big Knicks, and you know, he managed to make that happen and took Ivan Rabb's second two-way spot. So I'm very excited to see him play next year. Hopefully he doesn't get the same injury bug as he did this year that ultimately made it so that he couldn't play for the Big Knicks this year.
Yeah, I've some similar names. Ellington is my next guy up, I guess, number 12, I want to say. I don't know why I only ended up with 16 people. I'll find out who I'm missing.
Well, we'll figure out who you're missing.
Yeah. Taj, after, and that's like, look, like Taj is like one of the best dudes on the team, was so incredibly selfless. Like, I just thought every minute he was on the court was kind of a waste. Like, he, I don't know. I don't think he needed to play. Trier is next because for all the weird social media shit and the fact that he was in and out of the rotation and looked like kind of broken as a player early in the year, like aesthetically, I think he's just one of my four or five favorite games on the team. Like, I really, like when that guy's cooking, like I really, really enjoy watching him play. And I kind of want to move him up a spot. So I feel like I have him too low, but just the off court stuff is just, it's too much and it's too weird. Knox is next, a guy who works extremely hard. Love everything I read about him. It's the same issue as always, or the same issue through two seasons. It really hasn't translated to the court yet in any consistent way. And I think as people who do like daily podcasts, he's almost the most frustrating person to cover because your inclination is to look for positives and to try to spin it in such a way that he could be really good. And there's so many times where I'm like, all right, this guy just isn't an NBA player, but you kind of have to hold that hope because there are those rare, rare examples of guys who got off to similar starts to him and then had a lot of tools like him and found a way to put it together down the road. So very mixed emotions on Kevin Knox. And then, Kenny Wooten's my last guy. I'm very similar to you. He's kind of in the middle, just by the sheer fact that I know nothing negative about him and that he can fly. That's kind of enough for me at this point. Where do you go forward from here, Alex?
So my next four, before we do our top three, I get the feeling our top three is the same. Probably every Knicks fan's top, not every Knicks fan's top three, but most Knicks fans' top three is probably the same. My next is Iggy Brazdeikis. He is another guy that we didn't really get to see much of at the pro level this year, but I do have high hopes for him. I don't really have any super strong opinions on him other than that I like him, and he seems like a likable person, which factors into this. I also do have pretty high hopes for his basketball ability of maybe turning into a Joe Ingles type if we can luck out. You know, a guy that maybe won't be a dynamite scorer, but that can, you know, shoot the three and play physical defense even if he's not the best defender in the world, and who has a surprisingly advanced passing repertoire. And then Kadeem Allen, I have next. I've just grown to really like Kadeem Allen over the last couple of years, and I really hope that the Knicks sign him to a real contract next year, to a, you know, their third point guard spot, and just kind of roll with, at the very least, him and Frank. You know, Frank starting, Kadeem off the bench to sort of provide a similar experience, because I think there's a real value to having consistency from your starter to your backup in the NBA, you know, at least at some positions of like style of play and everything. So then you can easily mix and match parts off the bench, without there being too much of a, you know, weird drop off, or total change of style of play. And so I like him for that. He's a little on the older side, but every time he's in there, I walk away impressed with how he played by and large. He takes care of the ball. He doesn't turn it over too much. He, shoots a good percentage from three, all that good stuff. So, hopefully we'll see him back. And then, I have Dotson next, and
that's who I'm missing. Yeah,
you know, Dotson's always the forgotten man. And then when I sit down and think about him, I'm like, you know, he's pretty awesome. You know, I hope that he sticks on the team as well. And I hope the Knicks' diabolical plan, at least my tinfoil hat theory diabolical plan of suppressing his value, works out for them. And they're able to keep him and keep him on a relatively affordable contract, and that he doesn't sign some huge offer sheet somewhere. But I guess we'll see as far as he goes. But he's definitely up there. I think he's just a good basketball player. And most of the time when he goes out there, you know, he's not – he doesn't make any boneheaded plays, kind of like Kadeem Allen. But in a shooting guard capacity, he's a little on the older side. But all in all, he goes out there. He makes, you know, good defensive plays. He rebounds well. He shoots a pretty good percentage for someone on the Knicks. I mean, you know, I think he only shot 35-36%, which is about league average this year, but on a team that consistently fields no three-point shooters, I'll take that. And then my final guy is your last guy from your thing, which is – or your second last guy, which is Kevin Knox. I have him pretty high because I have pretty high hopes for him. I've been saying since last year that I think if he puts it all together, he could be sort of like Rashard Lewis. And even if there's times where I question whether he's going to be able to do that, the end of this season provided me a lot of hope as far as his ability to learn how to play defense better and his ability to pass better than I thought that he ever could, and in particular, like, run pick and rolls with Mitch. And his shooting form is just so beautiful that at a certain point it's going to come through. It's kind of like Frank in that regard. They both just have this picture perfect arcing shot that I'm like, once they just learn to tuck their elbow just a little bit more or whatever, they'll figure it out and they'll start splashing like sooner than later. So high hopes for Kevin Knox. He comes in as my fourth highest rated player on the team.
All right. I got Reggie Bullock next. Maybe you'd have him a little bit higher. Out of like, I'm trying to, I maybe like interviewed like 25-ish NBA players in my life, and he's right up there for the nicest one. Like just genuinely a great dude who's gone through a lot of personal hardship. I generally like him as a player because he holds his own defensively, and just in terms of his sheer gravity, is nominally a positive contributor offensively. I thought he got a little like shot happy at times this year and was maybe empowered by being on one of the lesser rosters of his career to take shots he wouldn't normally take. And I think that he was doing himself and the team a disservice in that, just because he probably is kind of who he is at this point. That's a pure three-point shooter. And outside of occasional cuts to the basket and like a drive here or there, that should sort of be the limit of his game. And the mid-range pull-ups got to me a little bit, so that's why I have him kind of low, but just a sublime human being. Iggy Brazdeikis, I was tempted to have him higher, but I thought it would be kind of unfair. I like the craft in his game, and I know I think maybe I'm just prescribing too many stereotypical white basketball attributes to him, like, oh, he hustles, he's smart, he cuts to the rim. But you do see a few of those things into his game. And more than that, I just think he's like a very intuitive basketball player. From the small samples as I got, and whether or not that translates from the G League to the NBA, we still need to see because we haven't seen him in real NBA competition in a game that's not a blowout yet, but cautiously optimistic about him. Damian Dotson is next. Like I made a point to talk about this on the Goals podcast we did with him, but I love how explosive he got and how good he got on drives. Like there are still steps forward he has to take. I would like his shot to become a little bit more consistent. Sometimes he goes for a knockout punch when it's not really necessary, but there's a lot to his game that I like. And I hope, like you, he has a role on next year's team. And then my final guy in there is actually RJ Barrett, my fourth favorite player on the Knicks. Again, he was amazing. Like he really is. I think if we do this list again next year, I'd be shocked if he's not in my top three, much less my top two. But he's such a great competitor and probably the type of competitor that the Knicks have had like five times total in our lifetimes. Like he you could just tell as a teenager, he's already kind of a badass and had some big moments. The only thing holding him back for me is his jumper. Like that's such an important part for me of like falling in love with the guy, him having a pretty looking jumper. And I still think it's sort of broken, even though there were stretches where it looked good. If he can get that more consistent, and his basketball aesthetic more so lines up with exactly what I want, he'll be higher on this list, but just brilliant for a young age, super competitor, and he's going to be great. Alex, without further ado, I know we're going to have two of the three guys the same, and I think it's by process of elimination. I know who your top three are, but why don't you break it down for us?
Yeah, by process of elimination, I know who your top three are too, I'm intrigued to see where it's gonna go from here. But
yeah,
my three is RJ. You know, same sort of thing that you said. I mean, I have pretty high hopes for him to at least become a second best player on a good team. You know, maybe a third best player on a championship team at minimum. I just think that eventually, once he gets good coaching and starts being used the way that he should be, his three-point shooting is going to come around. His final number for a rookie this year, not too shabby. Let me look at his final stat. If I remember right, it's like 32.6% or something like that. 32%. So it really, like, for a rookie, and especially one that came in with a reputation of apparently having a busted jump shot, and who's shooting on 3.5 attempts per game volume, I mean, not too bad to shoot 32%, particularly when you had, like, good vet Julius Randle shooting 28% and firing up the same amount of attempts every game with really no improvement. And RJ, I think, showed some improvement on that shot throughout the year. So, I have high hopes for his shot to come around. I have high hopes for eventually a good coach to come in. Not to say that Miller, I think, was bad, but I don't know if he was necessarily empowered RJ as much as I wanted. Hopefully you get a coach next that will really look to empower him and put him in positions to succeed and start finding that potential as a potential second or third best player on a really good team. Or maybe he'll even surprise us and he'll go straight superstar. And I mean, because certainly the defensive foundation is there. I think he's a better athlete than he gets given credit for. He's a really good passer, as we learned at different points during the season. So I have pretty high hopes for him. And, you know, once this finishing and three-point shot comes around too, Knicks could have a really good player on their hands. Next up is Mitchell Robinson. And that gives away who my top guy is going to be, but I'll hold it close to the vest for just another minute. But Mitch, I don't know how much more we can say that hasn't already been said by us at this point. I mean, he just broke the single season field goal percentage record, shooting 74.2% for the whole year. That's crazy. That's a really good percentage. Granted, it's all in close stuff, but I think that he is at some point going to look to add a three-pointer to his game as well, or at least an elbow jumper. Based off, we've seen him take a few of those shots, you know, over the last couple of years. And then, his defensive ability is insane. He also, you know, when you factored in personalities in this, my top three was very dependent on that as well. RJ is just a really well-adjusted kid who took right to the market and just kind of seems made for New York. Nothing phases him. Even on the court, he doesn't seem to celebrate too much or ever get down too much. He's just kind of stoic at all times. He's like a born professional, ready for this. Mitch, in sort of a different way, on the court, very demonstrative, not in like annoying ways. Like, he's not complaining about calls so much and stuff, but, you know, he gets fired up and he seems to have a good time with his teammates, in the locker room and, you know, elsewhere, like on his little TV series on MSG. He's just a big goofball. He's a ton of fun to have on your team as a guy who's, you know, in myself, who blogs and goes to the games and does this podcast. He's a very fun player to have on the team and immensely talented. And then obviously the top guy then, is Frank Ntilikina, which will probably make some people, some of the more vocal, you know, segments of Twitter and whatever roll their eyes at this. But I love Frank. I love the way that he plays the game. I think towards the end of the year, we finally started to see what he could look like if he truly believes in himself and is empowered to take shots and look for his own thing rather than just everybody else's. But he's also very great at setting up the offense, particularly for someone as young as he is. He garners the respect of pretty much everyone on the team, it seems, even on this team this year, where it seemed like there was sort of a split between vets and youth as far as, you know, who got the ball and who had sort of the respect of each other and stuff like that. I think, you know, he was that rare guy that had the respect of everybody. And, you know, you could see where he would get the ball from Julius Randle when other players might not get him to give up the ball. You know, he just had a command over everybody out there, regardless if he was playing with Taj Gibson or Mitchell Robinson. You know, he always had rapport with the center and, you know, made a lot of really good reads, sometimes overpasses, but that's something that I think he's working through, and he started to shoot better from the free throw line towards the end of the year, or I should say get to the free throw line more so he continued shooting a good percentage because he was a great free throw shooter all year. And, yeah, just, I don't know. He's also just, I think he's such a good dude. He's so humble and nice and friendly. He gives, you know, tons of great interviews and seems to really have good rapport with all of his teammates. He and RJ Barrett speak French together and have this like great little bond as two of the, you know, more prominent faces on the team. And, you know, as someone who's been inside the locker room, he's not very vocal in the locker room either, but he seems very well liked by, you know, media fans, locker room, everything alike. And his coaches always speak high praise of him. And then I didn't even mention the defense, which is like all world levels of good. So yeah, that's my top three.
I had Kadeem Allen at my number three spot. I think this is a little insane, but I considered having him at number two over Frank, and he made the switch at the last second. And I admit that it's the totally irrational love, because I've had a long journey with Kadeem Allen, from hating him as an Arizona State student while he terrorized us at Arizona, and then getting to broadcast his last Pac-12 tournament run, where him and Trier were pretty kick-ass, along with hopeful future Nick Lowry Markkanen on that team. And he just, I don't know, whenever he plays, like, it's so satisfying to watch, like, a Knicks point guard who feels like they have total control of the offense and can also hit a jumper, because Frank is halfway there, but he doesn't. I still have very little faith, like, except for games where he gets hot, that his perimeter shots are going to go in, while Allen, every time he shoots, at least from distance, I think he's going to make it. And it's kind of insane having him this high, because he's such a bit player on the Knicks and, like, really didn't get to play for the majority of the past two seasons because of the nature of his contract and, for whatever reason, irrational love of point guards who I think aren't nearly as good as him. But, I really don't know a lot about him personally, but as a basketball player, even though I can objectively admit he's not great and probably best case scenario, he's a backup point guard in the NBA long term. I think he's really solid, and I don't think he gets a good enough rep for being sort of the one of the very few kind of complete guys on the roster, even if his ceiling isn't as high as some of these other dudes. Frank is number two. Everything you said, I don't have a whole lot to add. I'm with you on everything, obviously. We always love Frank. We always will love Frank. It is absolutely unconditional. Mitchell Robinson, number one. Just, there are very few guys in the NBA who stand out physically relative to other guys in the NBA, because you're talking, I mean, I would argue the best athletes in the world of any sport when you take into account everything guys in the league have to do. Maybe that's a debate for another day, but I just think, I mean, everyone in the, just to make it to the NBA, you have to be operating at such a high level. And for Mitchell Robinson, night in and night out, to just blow opposing players out of the water when he doesn't totally know what he's doing yet, when you take into account every aspect of his game, like, he's just, sky's the limit for that guy. And either very, very few Knicks in my lifetime that I've enjoyed watching more, if any. So Mitchell Robinson's a clear number one for me.
Now, is there any – so I don't think we need to dive too much into talent-wise and stuff, but if you were going to do this purely based off the latter part of the question of ranking of how good everyone is on the roster, would your top five change at all?
Yeah. It would be Mitch first, RJ second – who's third is like, is a real, I think the top two are pretty clear. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd probably go, this is going to sound like bullshit to people, but I'd probably go Frank third, honestly, because I don't believe Randall's like that much of a productive player. Dot fourth. And I feel like this is like, people are going to interpret this as just hate that I don't have Randall in there, but like, I genuinely think he's bad for a team with how much of a role he demands. So I might even go someone like Reggie Bullock fifth, who's just kind of solid. I'm assuming yours is different and probably has Randall in there.
Yeah, if we're strictly talking about how talented they are today, I would probably actually still go Mitch RJ, top two. It's probably irrational Frank love, but I may even put Frank as my number three as well. Then I'd probably slot Randall in there at fourth, because I think he's a lot better than what he showed this year. And I think a different coach is going to bring that out of him. And then the next guy after that, that's where it gets a little tougher, because it's like, were some of these guys better than they showed and just didn't get playing time? Like,
I really think it's Dot, probably.
Yeah, I think it could be Dotson, you know, as far as like consistently good play goes. Or you could maybe say Taj Gibson, but like he played such a bit part, you know, on the season, but he had some really productive stretches down the end of the year. I think he's he's at the end of his rope, I think, but he's still a very talented per minute player of giving you good defense and interior scoring and all that stuff, you know, just in short bursts. I think he's just best in that role at this point rather than playing big minutes. But yeah, that might be where I go, either Dot or Taj as my number five. It's tough to say though, you know, for sure. It was a real crapshoot once you get outside those top four or so players.
Oh, I think we're going to cut off the episode right here, guys. We are on quarantine time. There is no basketball. That means a finite amount of content, and we've got to stretch these out a little bit. Already 40 minutes in. So we'll bring you the last question tomorrow. It's a really good one, and I think Alex and I have it's actually like one of my favorite conversations we've had on the podcast in a while. We go through everything, all the big decisions that Leon Rose is going to have to make in the next couple of months and whether or not he will hit on them. We disagree a couple of times. I think there's some pretty good debate in there. So look forward to that on Thursday. And then on Friday, we have Chris Herring of 538 and ESPN coming on to discuss the 1993-1994 Knicks. We obviously talked about 98-99 with Mark Berman earlier this week. Check it out if you haven't already. But that was the last Knicks team that I think had a really feasible shot at winning an NBA title and is sort of the last great Knicks team in my mind. So be sure to tune in for that one on Friday. Until then, be good, be safe, stay home, wash your hands. Peace out.